fighting for America.
This is like playing poker with a guy who cheated you twice before. You know who does that? A moron.
Fighting for Idaho.
Well, you ever been to Idaho?
You know, it's funny you say that. Just this last autumn, I was up there on an elk hunting trip.
Did you get anything?
I did. I got the biggest elk I've ever gotten before in my life, and enjoying that on a weekly basis in our freezer.
Fighting for you.
I went and got engaged, so yeah, I kind of got a little bit of a life, but you know, not one that would be enough to ignore the Kevin Miller Show.
Boise's Mr. Right.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. This just in, apparently the group Gowan Strong is producing a new video talking about how great it is to live here in the Treasure Valley. I think that's wonderful. That's exciting. However, on the other hand, you think perhaps this should have been done a couple years ago. And look, better late than never. But what we really need is good, swift political influence, not shooting web videos. But it's better than nothing, right? By the way, you can read my article, How to Save Gowan Field, at 580kido.com. Coming up, much more on this conversation pertaining to the House State Affairs Committee yesterday concerning Representative Barbieri. We'll get your thoughts on that. And our interview with Senator Cameron, where we talk about textbooks, where we talk about teachers, and we talk about, well, how to pay for everything, including the Internet. That's coming up between now and 9 o'clock. They're the largest cohort, age cohort, in American history, but over 30% of them are still living at home. What's up with the millennials? Joining us now is director, producer, webman extraordinaire, author, co-director, writer, and parent, Jake Green. Good morning, Jake.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. And what makes the millennials so different from other generations? We take a look at them, and they're digital natives. Their influences, their initiatives seem to be different from baby boomers or Gen Xers or others.
Absolutely. And as you know, I'm a little worried. I fall into that category of people who are making web videos instead of taking decisive political action that you just spoke of. But the
Hold on. That's one for you. Go ahead. Yes.
I'll take it. It's early here in California.
Sure.
But the I think, you know, the biggest thing that creates, I think, a lot of awkwardness and creates a lot of the identity crisis that millennials go through, and certainly that I've gone through since I became a parent, who was somewhat the inspiration for millennialparent.com, which is the website, is that everybody is obsessed with this idea of a personal brand or a family brand, right? We've got so much, everyone sort of views themselves as like a 24-hour news station, and you're trying to populate all of these interesting narratives about your life or your family life, and it creates this sort of overwhelming task that you can't possibly keep up with, and you're trying to, you know, people are starting to worry more about how they're perceived than the life that they're living. And it's, you know, I laugh because with parents now, it's almost like people would care less about having a good time than having pictures that suggest they had a good time. And it's just creating it's creating sort of this wild dynamic. Throw in the fact that you've got these intergenerational families now where people aren't leaving the house. And in some cases, people are starting to have children while they still live with their own parents. And it's really sort of, wonderful fodder for comedy, which is why we sort of created these 2-minute videos that you can find on millennialparents.com.
Now, wait a minute. People are having babies and living at home with their parents?
Well, people are, I think you're seeing a lot of, because of sort of the financial conditions and the fact that there aren't a lot of great high paying jobs, in addition to seeing, you know, the people who just haven't left the nest, you're also seeing people who are merging family units, right? Where it's, why not make it work where you also have willing and excited babysitters in the grandparents, though you can't call them grandparents because that would suggest that they're old. So whatever the baby boomer parents want to brand themselves at, be it, you know, Poppy or Toots or Clowny or whatever they're talking about.
I see. What What if folks don't understand, though, as far as the digital natives that are the millennials? A lot of people say that, you know, they're focused more on quality of life, whether it's perception or reality, than actually going out and working 12, 16 hours a day. And I'm not saying that's true for all, but that might be the perception from other age cohorts.
Yeah, I think that there is a I don't know. Part of that, you know, part of that is sort of a stereotype, I think, that stems from generations having very different normals. And then part of that, I think, comes from the fact that millennials are so clear about every wanting to share everything that they're interested in and every sort of whim and dream that they may have in a daily moment, that it seems like they don't want to work very hard. When in fact it was the preceding generations that came up with the idea of work-life balance and then raised this generation of kids within that framework. But, you know, you're seeing, especially as you see, younger kids coming out of college today and getting into the working world, and you're really seeing a lot of people who want to work hard. They're just, you know, flailing. It's like they're vaguely ambitious. You know, I think the issue isn't so much about work ethic. The issue is about wanting to do everything at once and sort of, you know, being paralyzed as a result of it, right? Nobody wants to close a door on a talent or interest, and there that comes at the expense when you're trying to keep everything open. You're not really opening a door or becoming really, really good at one thing.
Well, speaking of which, I don't know how they keep up with, you know, Facebook is passe, but whether it's Twitter, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Snapchat, whether it's LinkedIn, that's a lot of platforms, never mind if they have their own personal websites. And, I mean, is this a generation that is native to ADD?
Oh, I'll tell you what, and I've been dealing with this a lot since I've been focusing on the Millennial Parents Project, but I'm amazed. Not only are these people running, not only are millennials, of which, you know, I'm sort of the oldest end, but not only are millennials, you know, running all of these channels for themselves, they've now started creating Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts for their children and in some cases their unborn children. I mean, how do you get work done during the day if you're essentially managing a local media station for your family? It just becomes, you know, it becomes overwhelming. And what happens is you end up in this sort of keep up with the Joneses mentality where somebody posted six pictures of their kids, so you have to try to one-up it, let alone people who are sort of spouting their amateur manifestos of the day or sharing their improv poetry online. There certainly is a lot of expression happening, and I don't know that the amount of imagination is unique to millennials, but certainly the number of people with a platform is staggering.
Where does that need come from to, you know, hey, I went to Portland, here I am in the plane. Is that actual digestible content, or is that being gratuitous, if you will?
Well, I mean, it depends. It's sort of like if you find it's a personalized version of what the 24-hour news cycles are doing, right?
Yeah.
It's like a plane crash goes down and they're saying, here's a picture of a plane for those of you who may not have ever seen a plane before, right? Like, it's not necessarily news. They're just finding a way to fill the space. So I think some of it is, some of it's gratuitous. Obviously, some people have built sort of miniature industries on their seemingly random and insignificant personal updates. But it is pretty wild when you think about over the last decade, just the amount of sharing sort of casual information and sharing that has taken over what used to be space reserved for more structured information.
Well, tell us about millennials as parents.
So, millennial parents are having a tough time right now because it's a generation. Millennials were raised to feel as individual and unique and cool as possible, and as parents, you can't be cool like you were before you had kids. And so Millennial Parents, the show, and what we did is created two-minute vignettes, fictional narrative vignettes that are sort of like if you imagine the space that comics in the Sunday paper used to fill, right? They're digestible, they're shareable, they're relatable. And they are based around a guy named Kurt who really wants to be cool, but he's sort of towing the line between older brother and creepy uncle when he tries to be cool. And his wife, who really wants to remain sophisticated, even though she doesn't have time to stay as tapped into all of the news programs as she used to be. So it's It's each episode focuses on a little identity crisis moment, be it a guy who has to deal with his friend who keeps sharing naked bathtub pictures of a toddler, or a woman who's struggling because she wants to sing songs to her kids from her childhood like her parents did, but all the songs from her childhood have explicit lyrics. So it's these little moments of sort of uniquely awkward millennial identity issues.
Boy, I can tell a lot of creativity. I like that between cool guy and creepy uncle.
Oh, I'll tell you what, man. I wanted to believe, when I had kids, I wanted to believe that I was still as cool as I was in college, and there were just a few moments that happened to me where it was like a slap in the face that you have crossed the line. You know, I was in a karaoke bar once, and everyone sort of has their two karaoke songs that they sing, like their fun party song, and then their slow song that they really try hard, but it's sort of a funny slow song. And when you become that creepy uncle, your funny slow song becomes your creepy slow song because no one in the audience knows it. And for me, my funny slow song was always Wicked Game. And if you've never heard that song before, Wicked Game by Chris Isaak, it's about one of the sketchiest sounding tunes you'll ever encounter. And so I ran into some trouble, just sort of I finished a song that usually got a standing ovation, and I was met with crickets and a lot of text messages that I knew said this guy is the creepiest person we've ever seen.
Don't you think men in general have a tough time making that transition? Everybody still wants to think of themselves as the cool guy, but in reality, age kind of, you know, it's nice if you're 25 and talking about a cosmetically appealing young ladies, but at 35 or 45, it doesn't have the same credibility.
Oh, it doesn't. And what you start doing is you start moving into sort of a more domesticated existence, but you still try to pretend to yourself and others that it's cool and cutting edge. You know, we did an episode that you can find on millennialparents.com called Tamed in the Man Cave. And to me, the whole idea of man caves speaks to what you're talking about, right?
Right.
It's the idea there are all these guys who talk about how cool their man cave is, when really what a man cave means is that you don't own the rest of your house, and that this is the one area where you've tried to manufacture a habitat like the zoo that mimics what you would have in the wild, when in fact, like, it's been stocked with things that your wife has okayed for you.
Yeah, I could go on and get myself in trouble. Jake Green, anything else you'd like to share with us? Any more words of insight for all of us hapless men?
I don't know, man. I mean, I think I've had such a wonderful time being sort of overwhelmed as a parent. In this project, millennialparents.com, we've had so much fun with people who've been sharing these with their family, regardless of if they're baby boomers or Gen X or millennials. We're going to keep creating more of this project, and we hope you guys will follow along at millennialparents.com or on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter.
Well, we'd love to have you back, sir.
Thank you so much. Have a great morning.
All right. There you have it. 818, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580-KIDO. Time for traffic now.
Back weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580-KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And I understand, especially here, local media, you know, it reflects on Idaho, and it's unfortunate that it does reflect on Idaho. I feel bad about that part of it because, you know, it's up here in the north. It's isolated. It's highly rural. And so, you know, the national media, East and West Coast, they're going to take this and, you know, really let people believe that we don't really have a clue. It's just astounding to me.
That was Representative Vito Barbieri earlier today. Kevin Miller at 580-KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And you have Representative Barbieri making the point that this was a hearing at the House State Affairs Committee where they were talking about life and abortion, what happens to somebody's body. And then you had folks, doctors, such, advocating for one procedure over another. Representative Barbieri says something. As the doctor compared it to a colonoscopy, he said, so what, you would swallow a pill? And then you had the press run with a statement, vilify State Representative Vito Barbieri, make fun of conservatism, make fun of Idaho, and because everybody is a giant behind a laptop or a phone screen, were to say, well, that's what you get. I think Representative Barbieri stood up for life. And quite frankly, we thank him for coming on this program to speak his mind honestly, openly, without censor, to get his side of the story. When he was describing what they were talking about, the health of the mother, the health of the baby at risk, it seems juvenile and infinitesimal, if that is a word, that we're talking about swallowing a camera or a pill or comparing pregnancy to a colonoscopy. Now, many of you have called me, and you have been there. You were at that hearing. I saw what happened to Senator Winder a couple years ago when he decided to stand up for life. And without this voice, without you defending these folks, you only hear one voice. So that's what we're discussing here at 580-5436. Let's go to the phones. We go to Tom Munns, TomMunns.com, Munns Tom Twitter. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Kevin. How are you this morning?
Living the dream.
Well, hey, this thing about Barbieri, you know, you probably saw the story that the AP picked up about the fact that they banned citizens from reporting in their own city hearing. What the legislature actually did that on their own. And what that actually does is not only does it clarify the truth for the people because they can see everything unedited, but it also defends positions like this the legislature is. So I can't help but wonder, since the legislature banned the ability for our right of freedom of the press, the true press, that is, if they didn't shoot their own foot. Because, you know, I used to put those videos on my website to be able to show the truth of what's going on.
And you were shown the door by the folks in Boise, yes.
Yeah, and so I can't understand, first of all, why there's not any more outrage, because I think that the liberty groups need to start descending upon, you know, these media outlets, you know, showing them exactly what a few dozen people are. But, you know, I mean, and then I had a representative the other day that said, you know, Tom, most people don't realize how much more moderate our legislature is than the actual people that actually live here. And I found that that was a pretty interesting statement. So there is this onslaught, you know, this attack against liberty-minded people, and our legislature actually supported it when they banned our ability to be able to film, to even be able to stand and help defend them.
Right. Back to Representative Barbieri, what do you think?
Well, Barbieri is one of the best legislators we have. Anybody that is liberty-minded to been around at all will understand exactly what he's going through. And the citizens need to actually, you know, we're really, really good, liberty-minded people, especially me, and I can admit my own guilt here. You know, we're good at lambasting legislators and making them feel like they're the enemy and all of that. But, you know, when you start learning about what they're up against and you start learning about those things, we're very, very poor at thanking them for taking the right position. And so I think people like, you know, the Scott girl that was down at the rally the other day, Barbieri, Boyle, Bat, some of these people that have really taken a pretty good position, we really need to come up alongside of them and thank them for the things that they do right.
Right, and defend them when they're being attacked. Coming up next, Senator Cameron joins us. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Joining us now, Senator Dean Cameron. Senator Cameron, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. You've been very busy lately, whether it's the internet, whether it's the budget, whether it's anything else going on with JFAC. We appreciate you joining us here at 580KIDO. Let's start with always a battle of intrigue, regardless of the political climate, the battle to fund education. We have people that want teachers to make more. We want textbooks in Boise and throughout the state. We also have the internet situation. Where would you like to begin, sir?
Well, let's start with public schools and the funding of public schools. It is a challenge to fit the necessary needs that public schools believe they have into our existing budget. We're working really hard, and in fact, in many areas of the state, public schools are not being able to keep up. They're not being able to attract and retain the best and brightest teachers. Over in the eastern part of the state, Wyoming, for example, is offering $5,000 signing bonuses, and in my area, in fact, I've got teachers positions that are vacant, and so kids are being taught with either substitutes, or they're being taught with kids that are also going to become a teacher. They're going through the alternative route, or they're doing their student teaching, but they're not doing it under a teacher. They're actually there in the classroom. And of course, we believe kids deserve to be taught by a certified teacher. So we've got some issues to address. The governor has his plan. We're waiting for the Jermaine committees to see if they pass the legislation necessary to implement the governor's plan. And we'll work it from there.
Senator, would you describe this as a crisis? And I know when dealing with the press, it's hyperbole, this, that, and the other, but you know, whether it's you, Senator Sitaway, and others that have brought up the crisis throughout the state, and you know, here in the Treasure Valley, sometimes we kind of think we're, you know, the state of Ada and Canyon, if you will, but these are real-life issues, you know, and in Canyon County they have the same issue as far as people that aren't certified teaching. Would you define that as a crisis, sir?
Crisis may be too strong of a word, but it is certainly problematic. It is certainly a very difficult situation, and every district is a little different because of its size and its makeup. Boise School District has other concerns. But because of their size and their makeup, although they certainly want to pay their teachers more, I don't think they have the same problems in attracting and retaining that you might see in other areas of the state. As you said, they have other issues with textbooks. They have other issues with other items. One of the problems we've got, frankly, is our number of kids are growing. We're adding over 167 classroom units. And if you think about what a classroom unit is, that's essentially a teacher and 21 to 25 students, depending on the size of the school. And so when you think about that, that's a pretty tremendous hit. So that in and of itself is driving the budget in some small capacity. The governor had quite planned on that many in his budget recommendation. He'd only planned on 87, but the numbers are clearly showing a much higher number. In fact, we may be underestimating it at 167.
Well, as we know in business and in other things, if you know, you're getting more people in, they need to be served. We have to get the revenue from somewhere. Any thoughts on that? I know the governor has a proposal. We have other folks have proposals, but If the growth is happening that much, we've got to pay for the additional infrastructure, as we see with all the levies, as you mentioned before, that have sprung up throughout the state for the past 3 or 4 years.
And that has been problematic. The levies certainly are a direct reflection of the fact that the state's revenue has been down, and we had to cut every budget, including public schools, although we protected public schools better than we did anybody else. Public schools initially took about a 7% reduction, while many other agencies were in the 20 to 25%, and some even further than that. Parks and Recreation, for example, was nearly an 80% reduction. Now, where the revenue comes from is the state is growing from a revenue standpoint. We are projected nearly a 5% growth for the remainder of this fiscal year and about a 5% growth for next year. It's a little bit anemic. It's not as strong as we would have liked. Sales tax numbers are still a little bit sluggish. Our corporate income tax numbers are very strong. So we're a little cautious not to overspend, and we should be, frankly. That's appropriate role that we should be anyhow, but we're not over anxious to build budgets up bigger than they can sustain themselves, because at some point then you have to have pullbacks and reductions. So the governor's budget plan does allow for the 7.4% reduction. Well, of course, with a 5% increase in revenue, you know that that's coming then from someplace else. We are working hard to hit that number, and we believe we can, but it will also mean that other state agencies don't get nearly as much as what the governor had initially projected.
Senator Dean Cameron with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Senator Cameron, is it you know, I'm a simpleton here. Is it just a question of paying teachers more to keep people here in the state and to actively recruit folks to be certified teachers and to teach, whether it's in Eastern Idaho or North Idaho or here in the Treasure Valley?
No, I don't think it is. I think we believe, everybody believes, that the current pay system is broken. Even the teachers believe that. And so there's a plan to restructure how we pay teachers. And then many legislators want additional accountability with that. Well, that, of course, raises some issues and concerns with some teachers. What's that accountability measure going to be? What will it look like? Are you going to be judging me based on the test scores of my students? And that's probably in and of itself, by itself, is not a responsible approach. So I think you're seeing the struggle in the legislature is over. How do we do this? They're looking at a 2 or 3 year tiered licensure program where you'd have a beginning teacher license, followed by a professional teacher's license. And then there's some talk about, do you have another step up, a mastery level? And each of those levels would have a significant adjustment in pay. And the governor's plan was to eventually get minimum teacher salary to about $40,000. And currently, the minimum teacher salary is $31,750. So, that is supposedly will take place over the next 5 years, but one will see whether we tackle that plan and go that direction, or whether we come up with our own plan altogether. That's really more of a decision of the Germain committees, and as a budget committee chairman, my job is to certainly have influence, but my job is to wait and see what the result is and then budget accordingly.
Well, you've been very busy. TV interviews, radio interviews, and others concerning the Internet, the Idaho Education Network. I know you've been working on that, and, you know, nobody's happy with the situation. Where are we, and what are your thoughts?
Well, we have been. I've not had a single issue take up more time this year than that. We've been in more meetings than I care to even imagine or even think about. I mean, it's just frustrating, angry a bit. For the most part, we feel comfortable that the direction the committee took last week was the only approach that we could take. As you know, the court ruled that the contracts were void, not voidable. And I know that may sound semantical, but void means that it was never in existence. We are required to fund based on a valid contract. And in fact, the Attorney General's office very clearly said to us that if we were to fund a contract that was void, it would be considered a misuse of public funds. That's something that I don't want ever to have associated with my name or with my committee. And so our only choice, in spite that there was tremendous pressure put on that we fund the current contracts either by an emergency contract or we set aside law or change law so that they could fund it, current contracts, we resisted that and said, no, our only choice is to help school districts make sure they can provide Internet service so that those kids that are taking IEN or IDLA classes or classes, distance learning classes, can continue to do so so that they're not affected, their graduation isn't affected this year. So that's what we've done so far. Our next step is to look at what we do for the next year. And of course, the same proponents that wanted us to sign the emergency contract with the same vendors want to be ready and up and ready to go in August with those same vendors. And it's not that we have anything against those vendors. It's the fact that contract has is tainted. It smells like it was done inappropriately. Not that it smells like it. It actually was done inappropriately. The court has ruled such. And so from our perspective, in order to get back to where we can qualify for E-rate funds, those are all our monies that are sent back to the federal government under when we buy cell phones and pay our telephone bills, in order to get back to using those funds to help in this process instead of using state tax dollars, we have to have a clean break. And we feel like that next year you'll see something very similar. And then the following year, you'll see a whole new mechanism. It won't be through the Department of Administration, who frankly is at blame here. And you will see it with better controls, better management from what we had it previously. And we're working on that piece at this point.
Senator Cameron, how confident are you that the Internet will stay in the schools through the rest of the year?
I'm very confident. There was lots of rumors, lots of, suggestions, frankly, given by the proponents who were trying to keep the existing contract that said, you know, the Internet was going to shut off Sunday. And, of course, as soon as we made the appropriation to schools, our seats weren't even cool yet, and the current vendors were already contacting the school districts, trying to get them to sign a continuance with them. And some will. Frankly, some, that is the best choice. Many others have gone out for bid, are opening the RFPs. I know that in my district, they opened an RFP. They were able to buy the same Internet service for about 40% of the cost. We've had some that are actually able to buy better Internet service, better bandwidth, for less money. And, of course, the state keeps telling us, well, that means that there will be some districts that are going to pay more. Well, the reality is if they're going to pay more, they should sign with the current vendor at the same rate that they're currently paying. And then when it comes to the summer, then they should go out for a strong RFP and really look carefully at it. So I don't believe that anybody's going to be shut down. If they are, there would have been mistakes made either by another vendor or by...
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.